This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Many people who evacuated their homes in New Orleans were forced to leave behind their pets. For example, buses taking evacuees to Texas did not allow animals aboard, and those who snuck their pets through had to give them up in Houston before taking shelter at the Astrodome. Most shelters, hotels, and motels do not allow animals. The Humane Society estimates that 40,000 animals were left behind. The ASPCA is part of a coalition of humane organizations working together to rescue the animals who survived Katrina. So far, approximately 5,000 animals have been rescued. The ASPCA sent animal relief workers into the region on August 29th and started rescue missions on September 5th. My guest, Margaret McLaughlin, volunteered to go to the region on August 29th, working with the ASPCA. She started off doing triage work, then went off in animal rescue boats. She's the director of vet technicians at an ASPCA animal hospital in New York. She's also a certified search and rescue diver. She returned home on Saturday. I spoke with her and asked what the strategy was in dispatching rescuers to specific locations.
Lamar Dixon was the staging area where we were all staying. Every night there would be a meeting of all the heads of the different organizations, and they would be passed out a list of addresses that the owners had called the 800 number for the LASPCA. So we would take this list and go out every morning and work off a grid system.
So tell me one of the stories about going to an address to find pets. Tell me a story about what it was like.
Well, one of the most memorable stories was, which a lot of people know this story already, it's the story of Rudy the pig. His owners called the 800 number and asked to have Rudy removed from the house. They learned that it was the last day that they could surrender and evacuate peacefully, or they would be physically removed from their home by the police. So out of desperation, they called the LASPCA number and asked to have Rudy removed. So when we motored up to the house was completely, there was like a moat completely around the house of water, this filthy water. And when we went into the house, they were very happy to see us. And so was Rudy, who was about 300 pounds. Rudy lived in the house. He had his own little bedroom with little pig pictures and all kinds of pig stuff. Yeah, it was really amazing. He had his own little bed, and the sheet on the bed had little pigs on it. So these are people that really, really, really love their pet pig.
So what did you do with the 300-pound animal? Did you fit on your
boat?
Well,
yeah, we had a huge dog carrier that we had the top off of. We brought that into the house. We had the pig stand on a blanket, and between six people, we lifted up the pig and placed him into the carrier and then put the top on the carrier. And the most wonderful feeling was when I told the owner that, because he was like, oh, I can't stay here anymore because I know that I'll never see my pig again. And I said, that's not true. And he said, aren't you going to euthanize the pig? And I said, no, we're taking your pig and we're going to keep him safe until you have your stuff together and you can come and pick him up again. And when he heard that we weren't going to euthanize his pet pig, he was just so happy and he was hugging us all. It was really, really wonderful.
What are you going to do with it? Where are you going to keep the pig?
The pig now is at Gonzales. Lamar Dixon is a equestrian center where that's the main staging area for the New Orleans area. It has several barns with probably 50 to 60 horse stalls in each of the barns. So that's where all of the animals are being held. Mm-hmm. So Rudy right now lives with another pig and a goat, last I saw him.
Well, you know, although most of your search was very directed because you had addresses from pet owners, did you see a lot of, like animals who had, like, left their home and were wandering around, you know, lost and afraid?
Oh, yes, we saw a lot of them in this one neighborhood that we went to, the St. Bernard Parish area. We would just motor down the street and just whistle, and at any given time, you could hear five or six different dogs barking. And we would just, capture them and collect them and put them in carriers. And when our boat was full, we'd just bring them back to our staging area, go back out again, get another boat full. One of the addresses that we heard dogs barking from, we actually saved five beagles. They had crawled up a tree that was knocked down by the hurricane, and they were in the way top branches, probably only 10 feet off the ground because the tree was laying down. And they were very, very scared, and they ran away and ran into their little, there were like little boxes for them. I guess it was like a puppy mill type of place. Some of the beagles were dead, but there were five that were alive, and we rescued them.
When you were rescuing dogs that were lost or afraid, were they afraid of you, or did they see you as a potential rescuer? I mean, I think a lot of animals, when they're afraid, they either hide or they fight.
Oh yeah, that was a problem. The majority of the dogs would be, and the cats were very, very frightened. You have to think it most of the time they were hiding under beds, or they were outside and hiding under whatever they could hide under, and we would use ropes and cache poles and stuff to try to get them out from under whatever they were hiding, and we had to take care not to get ourselves bit or injured.
How did you do that? What precautions did you take?
Well, to get cats, most of the time we would have an actual carrier, a cat carrier, and the majority of the time when you're capturing a cat, they'll go into a box. So the cats were pretty much easy. You could just kind of scoot them in or scare them into a corner and kind of trap them, and then they would go in. But the dogs are another story. They will not willingly go into a box. And then you would have to throw a leash on them or entice them with food.
Did you carry a lot of food for that purpose?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you also have to be careful not to feed them too much because they hadn't eaten in quite a few days, and you need to just give them very, very small meals at first. So when enticing them, we had to just give them tiny little pieces, just enough to get them over to you where you could slip a leash around their necks.
When the dogs were afraid of you, not realizing that you were there to save them, did that hurt at all? I mean, here you are, making many sacrifices to save these pets, and of course they don't know that, and they're not necessarily going to be like appreciative of your presence or friendly to you.
Yes, that's a little hard when you're wrestling and jumping over things. I mean, sometimes we'd have to like jump on top of, when you got out of the boat, you would have to jump on top of a car, from car to some a porch or something like that, to try to wrestle this, biting, vicious pit bull. You'd be like, "What am I doing here?" But as soon as you kept the leash on them and you gave them a little food, the majority of them, they were appreciative. They were just scared and protecting, their last stand.
Would you do certain things to try to calm them down, speak to them in a certain way?
Oh, yeah. Speak to them really softly. Give them little names. The food. Just very calmly move your hands. Approach them. Lower yourself so that you're not towering over them.
What was one of the riskier things that you did to rescue a dog?
I climbed over two cars. Well, one of them was a van, onto the roof of another car
When these are
and
cars that
walked.
were mostly submerged.
Yes, so just the roofs were showing. And then I walked up the back steps of a house where they were metal steps that were kind of not very secured to the building, to the second floor, which it had an open roof. And the water at one point had been probably a foot higher than it was because there were three dogs trapped on that roof. So I walked up those steps and I was able to entice two of them with food. They at first were barking and growling and lunging at me. But once they realized that I was a friend and I was trying to feed them and help them, they calmed down and I got them into the carriers. And one of them actually jumped off the roof into the water and started to swim around where one of the people working with me on my team, he jumped in the water and started after the dog, and he got a leash on the dog, and the dog eventually paddled over to our boat where we pulled him up into the boat.
I'm wincing as I hear this because I'm thinking about what's in the water, and I'm thinking of the dog jumping in it and of your colleague jumping in it.
Yeah, well, we had dry suits on. We were completely equipped with dry suits. So the only thing, we never got our heads exposed to the water, but our hands were exposed. Our hands and our feet were exposed.
Do you have any sores on them?
No.
Did you see, like, sores or infections on animals as a result of having been in the water?
Surprisingly, the animals that I saw one dog that he obviously had been standing in the water for quite a while, and he had sores on his feet. But horses, I saw quite a few horses at the Lamar Dixon staging area that had been standing in water, and they were pretty bad off with the fungal infections.
Did you see any horses while you were, boating around the city looking for pets?
No. Cats, dogs.
What about rats and alligators?
No alligators. We did see one water moccasin.
Mm-hmm.
We saw two goldfish swimming. Barely swimming on the surface.
Any rats?
One rat. A lot of dead cats and puppies.
Floating?
Yeah.
Not dogs, just puppies?
Yeah, I didn't see any dead dogs. I mean, in the water. There were dead dogs in homes, but not in the water.
Do the dead dogs that you find in homes die of starvation or of drowning?
Drowning.
Were you able to see signs of some of the things that pet owners had done in hopes that it would help their pets survive the storm?
Oh, yeah. Most of the cats that we rescued were doing really, really well and probably had no idea what was going on outside. Most of the owners had left plenty of food, plenty of water, many different cat boxes, even for single cat homes. We often saw three and four cat boxes and an abundance of food. That was probably all the people that did that, all their animals were really well off. You know, they were just scared and lonely.
My guest is Margaret McLaughlin. We'll talk more about her experiences rescuing pets in New Orleans with the ASPCA after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Margaret McLaughlin. She spends several days volunteering with the ASPCA in New Orleans, going out on boats to search for and rescue stranded pets. A lot of the animals that you rescued, you knew their identity because their owners had already told you the address and had asked you to rescue their pets. But there were a lot of dogs that you rescued that you didn't know who they were, how do you identify where they're from, who their owners are, and try to get in touch?
Well, what we would do, some of the animals had collars with tags,
mm-hmm.
so that was pretty easy. But if an animal was found in a backyard of an address, when we would make a paper collar for them, and we would write, found a backyard of 2798, whatever. Those are the animals that are going to be very difficult for the people to find again.
If they're not claimed, what's going to happen to them? You know, people always worry with the ASPCA that if an animal isn't claimed in a certain amount of time, that the animal will be put to death. Now that there are so many animals that have been rescued from the ASPCA, what's going to happen to those who aren't matched up with their owners?
Well, Houston SPCA has done a tremendous amount of work fostering pets and setting up all kinds of databases. Pet Finder and Chameleon are setting up databases, pictures. Eventually, I think what will happen is these pets will probably, those that are not matched up with their owners, will probably be scattered throughout the country in different types of databases. And they will be found homes. I'm quite certain of that, that every one of the pets will be found a home. A lot of people like to adopt animals that come from something like Katrina. Oh, my dog was a rescue from Katrina. People like to have something attached to their animals.
Did you decide to adopt any yourself?
Oh, there was a cute little puppy that I really wanted, but my husband was like, "You can't bring home any more animals."
Did you find animals who were traveling in packs?
I think there was some talk of animals roaming in packs, but most of the dogs that we saw that were in a group, they were always in a group,
mm-hmm.
like they were in somebody's backyard or on someone's porch. They seemed to be of the same family.
Animals don't often like each other's company very much. You know, dogs bark at each other and get into fights on the street. Cats are not pleased when strange animals are in their presence. So what was it like to bring all these animals together who were already spooked onto a boat?
Well, they were in their separate individual carriers. So most of them were kind of scared being on the boat to begin with, so they didn't really say anything. The cats pretty much just, you know, hid in the back of the cages, and the dogs were kind of scared being on the water. So most of the time they were very quiet. Occasionally we would put two animals together that we thought were a family, like a mother and her puppies,
mm-hmm.
or two older dogs that we thought were a family. And then occasionally you'd hear some barking or a little bit of fighting going on. But other than that, most of the time the animals were very quiet inside the boat.
How many trips in and out did you make during a day?
2 to 3.
How many animals at one time could you carry?
Depending, like the day that we got the beagles, all 5 beagles were in one carrier. So we could probably have 10 animals on a boat. 6 to 10 animals.
And did you travel in a little fleet of rescue boats?
Yes, at any given time there were 5 to 6 boats, 3 people per team, so that there was always one person with the boat and 2 people could go out of the boat and find the animal.
Did you have any close calls during your rescue operation?
Yeah, I was entering a house via the back porch. And when I got up to the very top step of the porch, the back steps, as I went to step off the steps into the house, the steps totally gave away and started floating. And I was like floating and balancing and teeter-tottering. And I made a big giant stride and jumped into the house. It was like a cartoon.
And what did you find in the house?
We rescued two cats out of that house.
How'd you get back out if the stairs had floated away?
Jumped down, and then it was about chest high, the water.
So you jumped down into the water?
Yeah. We were in our dry suits.
But your face wasn't covered.
No, but the water was about chest high.
I see.
Yeah. Often we were walking in the water. And just imagine, you know, walking into a backyard, what you're walking over. You're walking over, you know, fallen trees and shrubs and plants and barbecues and picnic tables and you name it can be back there.
Which you can't even see because it's in the water.
Exactly. So you have to very gingerly kind of shuffle your feet and step, you know, all the time holding your balance.
Margaret McLaughlin will talk more about her animal rescue work with the ASPCA in New Orleans in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Margaret McLaughlin. She's the director of vet technicians at an ASPCA animal hospital in New York. McLaughlin volunteered to work with the ASPCA animal rescue team in New Orleans. She worked on boats that went through the New Orleans neighborhoods searching for and rescuing stranded pets. Did you see a lot of National Guard or police?
Oh, they were everywhere. We normally entered the city at about 9 a.m., and we had to be out. It was a 5:30 curfew. We had to be out of the city or on our way out of the city by 5:30. And at any given time, there were truckloads of military people, whether they be in those amphibians or a Black Hawk helicopter flying overhead, or just sheriffs walking by.
Did you have any special, badges or markings on your clothes to indicate to police or to the National Guard that you were from the ASPCA and you had an official function?
For the first few days, I wore my ASPCA badge, but it's just a badge and it's small. You know, my picture ID. But we were dressed in dry suits, which are very colorful. Some of them were blue and yellow. Some were yellow and black. We had life vests on. We had helmets on. And we had a boatload of carriers, animal carriers. So nobody ever questioned us. They knew, oh, you're here for the animals. Or they would just approach us and tell us about some other animals that they saw someplace else. They knew, everybody knew who we were.
Did you run into a lot of other rescue teams in the water?
Not animal rescues, because we were on grids. But we did run into a few human rescues that we would see them going by. Actually, my team rescued one group of humans. The man had had a stroke 4 days earlier. Now, we were supposed to only rescue animals, but a Black Hawk helicopter swooped very above us, and it was low enough that he was making the water rippling, and he was making all kinds of signals to us, and all of us being civilians had no idea what they wanted us to do. Finally, we understood that they wanted us to go a block away from where we were, but there was no outlet. So we actually had this Black Hawk helicopter take us in a kind of in a roundabout way and direct us to a house that had four people in the house, and the father, he was very old, probably in his 80s. He had had a stroke 4 days earlier. So they told us that we needed to rescue these people and take them.
And were you able to do it?
Yeah. We lifted up the elderly man and we put him in the boat and his, I think it was two sons and his daughter and a couple of pieces of their luggage. We put them in the boat and we walked alongside the boat back to our staging area.
Did you find any dead people in your search for pets?
I did see a few bodies outside on the streets, not in the houses.
And what would you do when you saw dead bodies? Were you supposed to report them?
No. We just continued on our way. It was kind of par for the course. It wasn't, you know, we were told that we would see them. The military was all over the place. I mean, a massive military presence everywhere. And they were aware of it. We weren't on any streets that they weren't on.
Were you surprised at all by what your actual reaction was to seeing dead bodies floating by?
Yeah, at first it was kind of one of those things where you can't stop staring, but you can't turn your head away. And then the next time I was walking, pulling the boat. It was a very shallow area. And I was walking on the street, and there was a body on my right and a turned over porta potty on the left. And I was thinking to myself, well, at least now I know what the smell is that I'm smelling. And it's kind of indescribable. You really have to be there to understand how you think.
Some people listening now might be thinking, is it appropriate to worry so much about pets and have a rescue operation for pets when not all of the people were rescued and when there were still dead human bodies floating by? Is that the kind of thing that you thought about much? You know, is it appropriate to worry about animals when there are still people in jeopardy?
It's all kind of connected. Most of the people that we saw that would not evacuate, they would not evacuate because they still had their pets, and they would not leave their pets behind. So it's kind of, we go in and get their pets, and then they can be evacuated. So it's pretty much the same, even though we're helping the animals, and our mission is to help the animals, we're still helping the people.
You know, people who survive a catastrophe can get counseling, but you can't really counsel animals and help them understand what's happened to them and help them return to a more stable existence or explain to them that they can never go home again. Have you spoken to other people who are doing pet rescue about dealing with the animal's trauma after they're rescued?
Yeah, thank goodness that there are so many people that are kind-hearted enough to volunteer their shelter help. All of these animals, they need special attention. They need walks. They need quality walks. They need quality time with people that are going to be there just to sit with them or pet them, encourage them, because we can't speak to them.
How did you feel about risking your health to save other people's pets?
At first, I was a little nervous about touching the water, but just the more I saw the pets coming out of the water and the houses, and they were covered with muck. the more I was like, you know, I didn't think about it. I just wanted to help, and I wanted to do whatever I could for the animals and for the people whose pets they were. That I would hope that somebody would go into my house if necessary someday.
At the risk of sounding kind of corny in times of a crisis, but what's like the cutest image that stays in your mind?
The cutest image is this adorable little black pit bull puppy. She was so hard to capture because she was so cute. We couldn't get a leash around her. She was just a squiggly, wiggly thing that just, you know, like you see some dogs, you go to pet them and immediately they're on their backs and giving you their stomach.
Right, yeah.
Well, that's what she was doing. And every time we tried to get the lead around her neck, she was just wiggly and licking you. And, you know, you don't want this dog to lick you because it's been in this mucky water. So you're trying to keep your distance, but at the same time, this dog is just like so thrilled that you're there. And she was very cute.
Is this a dog you thought about adopting yourself?
Yeah, I would have taken her in a second.
But you didn't because your husband didn't want more animals.
Right. And most of these animals have homes. It's just a matter
of course,
getting the owners, matching the owners with the pets.
So how do you feel now?
I'm very tired. I'm mentally and physically exhausted. I arrived back in the city on Saturday night, and I pretty much slept all of Sunday and all of Monday. And today's my first day back at work, but I'm very tired. That's what I could say. But I'm very, very happy to be home.
Well, Margaret, thank you for the work that you did, and thank you for talking with us about it.
Thank you.
Margaret McLaughlin worked as a volunteer with the ASPCA Animal Rescue Mission in New Orleans. She's the director of vet techs at an ASPCA hospital in New York. Coming up, the filmmaker and adventurer who created King Kong. This is Fresh Air.